Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts right after this.
Get ready for the 2023 Crop Consultant Conference in Visalia, California on September 27th and 28th, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors. This two-day event will feature a combined 44 hours of live and online continuing education units for attendees in the heart of California, a trade show, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. Come join CCAs, PCAs, growers, and industry professionals at the Visalia Convention Center to hear from researchers and colleagues on the latest in agriculture. Registration is now open at progressivecrop.com/conference.
Smart growers know sustainability means managing pests at the same time they manage other priorities in their fields, which is why smart growers know Certis Biologicals. For more than 20 years, Certis Biologicals has been the world's leader when it comes to biological pesticides, delivering proven solutions that keep operations sustainable and growing. Learn more at CertisBio.com.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture Undersecretary Christine Birdsong, along with staff from the Department's Office of Environmental Farming and Innovation, highlighted California's climate-smart agricultural leadership as well as trade in Mexico City recently. In collaboration with Mexico's Secretariat of Agriculture and Rural Development, CDFA hosted a climate-smart agriculture workshop at the location of California's Trade and Service Desk in Mexico. Established in 2019, the Trade and Service Desk is a venue to promote two-way trade and strengthen California's economic, political, and cultural relationship with Mexico. The Climate Smart Agricultural Workshop brought together researchers, government representatives, and academia to focus on opportunities related to water use efficiency, healthy soils, and sustainable pest management. The CDFA team was joined by representatives from the University of California, Merced, and UC Davis. The workshop was a follow-up to a memorandum of agreement that CDFA signed with SATER in 2019. CDFA continues international collaboration and engagement on climate-smart agricultural practices and policies to strengthen connections between academia, government, and farmers on climate resilience. Partnerships strengthen research collaboration and ag tech innovations while furthering the adoption of on-farm practices to advance sustainability and soil health. CDFA leveraged the visit to Mexico City to promote California agriculture to trade representatives and media in collaboration with in-market trade associations, and they had opportunities to meet with representatives from several different agencies. As fall inches closer, supplies of local tomato grapes are still good. On the West Coast, following Tropical Storm Hillary hitting California last month, it impacted production there for about 2 weeks, but the region has since caught back up and supplies are coming out of there again. As for demand, it's been moderate. It hasn't been great, so it feels a little weaker than it has been. That according to Roger Ream of Blue Creek Produce, LLC. As for demand, it has been moderate, according to growers. The market was very strong about a month ago and is still strong for this time of the year. Supply still seems to be plentiful enough, and pricing also seems good for farms and markets. Looking ahead, though, it's all about the weather, as September and October conditions can change drastically. The organic plum season out of California will run to the end of October this year. Supplies are good. Typically, the season starts in early May. However, the season got started late like all other tree fruit did, including peaches, nectarines, and apricots, along with grapes and melons, according to Robert Schuler, Director of Public Relations for Melissa's World Variety Produce. That means the plum season did not start until the first week of June, given a bloom was later this year, and there was a lot more precipitation and cold in the growing areas. Organic plums are coming out of the Central Valley of California, and Melissa's World Variety packs its domestic plums in a clamshell of plum bites. This means it may include several varieties, including Burgundy, Wixen, Freedom, Black Amber, Fortune, Joanna Red, Catalina, Frere, and more. A new variety of plums comes into season every 2 weeks. What they put in their plum bites are the best tasting organic plums during that season, according to Schuler. There are varieties like Santa Rosa, which last 6 to 7 weeks. That's the only true variety that lasts longer, and the rest lasts 2 to 4 weeks. Given a late start, that means there are 4 fewer weeks of plums this year. Schuler notes that sales are very strong and says that plums are one of the company's top organic items during the summer. summer and early fall months. He said they had plans for distribution in May, but it was backed up and created more demand for when it became available. As for pricing, it looks similar to last year's pricing. Last year was more of a drought season, so they probably had better overall supply and bigger supply because the season started in early May. However, all in all, he says it will be consistent with last season. Pricing on Brussels sprouts could stay strong for the next several weeks. James DeLormer of Church Brothers Farms says he thinks it will stay steady or soften up a little as more acreage comes online. However, he does not think it's going to get oversupplied anytime soon and cause significant downward pressure on pricing. While DeLormer says he has seen some very good yields on Brussels sprouts regionally for the industry, it's below normal for this time of the year. Most of that is due to the unusually wet winter they had this year. It not only impacted planting schedules, but also quality and earlier yields. Currently, the vegetable is coming out of the Castroville, Salinas, California area. As for demand, it's good, but not as strong as it was a few weeks back. He says it has tapered off a little bit and there's more coming on, but it's still quite good. Prices for this time of the year are the highest he's ever seen for August and September. From a demand standpoint, Brussels sprouts have seasonal peaks around the holidays, such as the Canadian and U.S. Thanksgivings, and he says that's when you see an increase of easily 50% over normal numbers. Demand is not as high for Christmas and New Year's through January, though January sees a surge in interest again when consumers often turn to healthier eating. He says it subsides in February, and then there is a lot of big eating holidays in the spring, so typically demand dips back down. That said, Church Brothers Farms is working to develop the use of sprouts in different packs and dimensions beyond traditional bulk packs. He says they're looking more to the value-added category to increase overall consumption. He says there's definitely been an increase in the food service sector, and they're seeing interest specifically in the halves category as opposed to the whole. Tulare County farmers, packing houses, and businesses who were negatively affected by the heavy rains this past spring may be eligible for up to $50,000 in grant money thanks to a $2 million disaster assistance fund approved by the Tulare County Board of Supervisors. To be eligible for this grant, your business must have sustained property land damage or experienced unanticipated expenses caused by the 2023 March storms. The rains caused by atmospheric rivers hitting Tulare County caused thousands of flood-related damage reports and forced hundreds to evacuate. While many individuals qualify for federal assistance, Tulare County officials recognized that for many farmers, ranchers, and businesses, there was no funding available for the damage they experienced or the mitigation efforts they implemented. This grant money will support local businesses and provide assistance for those who have fallen through other funding gaps. California's almond crop is forecast up this year, potentially becoming the third largest crop on record. USDA agricultural economist Catherine Weber stated that California's 2023 almond production on a shell basis is forecast at 2.6 billion pounds, up 1% from last season's crop. If realized, 2023 almond production would be the third largest on record behind 2020 and 2021. While water availability was a minor concern this year, unseasonably cold temperatures and stormy weather conditions during almond bloom negatively impacted pollination. While the preliminary 2023 yield estimate is down 1% from last year, faring acres are estimated to reach a record-breaking 1.38 million, which is a 30,000-acre increase from 2022. California is the sole producer of almonds for the U.S., providing 80% of the world almond supply. Santa Paula-based Limoneria Company, a diversified citrus growing, packing, selling, and marketing company with related agribusiness activities and real estate development operations, has reported financial results for the third quarter ending July 31st of 2023. Harold Edwards, president and chief executive officer of the company, says the success of their strategic shift towards an asset-lighter business model is evident in their third quarter sales, with brokered lemons and other lemon sales growing 76% year-over-year to $8.8 million. And achieving farm management revenue of $5.4 million. Additionally, they continue to make headway monetizing water assets with the recently announced water fallowing program in Yuma, Arizona, for expected annual proceeds of $1.3 million. They anticipate the sale of two remaining identified non-strategic assets in the next 9 months. He says over the past year, they have worked to identify and eliminate unproductive or unprofitable parts of their business, including the sale of non-strategic assets, exit exiting farm operations in Cadiz, and terminating their long-term pension plan, all of which they expect to dramatically improve margins starting in fiscal year 2024. For the third quarter fiscal year 2023, total net revenue was $52.5 million compared to total net revenue of $58.9 million in the third quarter of the previous fiscal year. Agribusiness revenue was $51.1 million compared to $57.6 million in the third quarter of last year. Other operations revenue was $1.4 million compared to $1.3 million in the third quarter of fiscal year 2022. Agribusiness revenue for the third quarter of fiscal year 2023 includes $24.2 million in fresh lemon sales compared to $27.8 million in fresh lemon sales during the same period of fiscal year 2022. Approximately 1.4 million cartons of U.S. packed fresh lemons were sold in aggregate during the third quarter of fiscal year 2023 at $17.92 average price per carton compared to approximately 1.5 million cartons sold at $18.39 average price per carton during the third quarter of fiscal year 2022.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante. Imagination, innovation, science in action.
The wet process of walnut hulling is seemingly all of a sudden being included in a multi-commodity requirement by OSHA and the National Fire Prevention Association to prevent dust combustion in processing facilities. So why are walnuts being affected by this? Chris McLaughlin, Western Ag Processors Association.
Their designation includes a variety of ag materials, and like in the article that I wrote, you know, it talks about explosions at grain mills and other, you know, catastrophic events that have happened in other ag processing operations. You wouldn't think that walnuts would be roped into this. A lot of the other designations that they've given are dry processes, specifically grain. And so, you know, you have the examples of that on, you know, in newspapers and being reported on. But for us, it's really surprising to see, and in our kind of dive into walnut hullers and why they're designated that way, you can easily kind of relate it that this designation is kind of given across the board for a variety of commodities that must adhere to, you know, NFPA and then ultimately state and local jurisdiction in terms of fire prevention. But in a process like walnuts, that doesn't make any sense at all with the wet process like it is. That process does generate some, you know, small material being broken off, and you can see it accumulated on the side of equipment or the sides of the actual building. But it's nowhere near a combustible hazard, much like, you know, what grain and other commodities like that can produce. So that's where we decided we really needed to get involved.
In terms of how costly this could be, sprinkler installation is at the top of the list. Fire monitoring devices and vacuum systems make up some of the other stringent requirements.
As part of the NFPA's guidelines, you wouldn't be a walnut huller would not be allowed to allow any dust accumulate over 1/32 of an inch on any surface, motor, piece of equipment, anything like that. You would have to have somebody around the clock walking around, and you wouldn't be able to use compressed air to blow it off. You know, you think that's the easy route to go. You get a guy with a long handle, he's able to kind of blow stuff off. The requirements say that in a situation like that, with the designation that walnut hullers have, you would need a vacuum instead. And so you would have one designated person on your payroll walking around your facility, vacuuming up all the material, all the loose material that accumulates throughout the season into a vacuum. And that's the way that they're able to accumulate or collect and then dispose of at that point. You're not allowed to blow it around. Again, you're looking at the designation being applied to similar in a grain facility, where that kind of suspended material within the air still poses a great risk on combustibility and explosions or fires. And so again, that designation doesn't make any sense in a wet process. You still see a high moisture content with a lot of the material as it's chipping off in the hulling process. And so it doesn't make any sense to designate it that way under that system. But along with the vacuum component of it, you would then be required to install types of readers or thermometers within equipment that is able to detect if there's a flare up in temperatures that would indicate that a fire is present or sparking, anything like that, that would, give you kind of an early warning that, you know, there's signs there that there could be a fire or a combustibility hazard. And so that's added on to equipment manufacturing costs. It's retrofitting. It's all of those different designations that are included with that's a big red flag for us. And so that's, again, why we really needed to get involved with this whole process.
As per usual, with these types of burdensome processor issues, Western Ag Processors Association has taken necessary measures in the short term to support the industry, even going as far as to conduct a scientific experiment to disprove combustibility assumptions surrounding walnut dust levels.
After that meeting, I mean, we immediately put our heads together. We have prior experience in this similar situation facing the almond hulling industry, where the accumulation of dust was deemed a fire hazard by the National Association, as well as state and local jurisdictions, which take a lot of what the National Association recommends and implements that in their controls. And so, similar to the almond situation, we have a great relationship with the USDA Ag Research Service lab in New Mexico, who, you know, if we have ideas like this, we can bounce it off of them if they're able to do research on it. If they're not, they tell us to find somebody else. But luckily enough, the lab in New Mexico is a very close partner for us. And so we reached out to them, provided them the samples. We went out to six different facilities, collected dust from six different walnut hullers throughout the state, bagged them, shipped them to New Mexico. Under NFPA, to show combustibility or a fire hazard, they have to follow a protocol that, you know, they test and sample and then further test with the use of a butane torch on determining combustibility and flammability for that material. And so, following these guidelines to a T, they sieved the material down to a specific micron set. They collected it into a specific formation. We have video of it all too, and held a butane torch to it for a certain amount of time, removed the butane torch, started a timer, and it's supposed to, you know, for combustibility designations or flammability designations, it has to burn to a certain point on that pile that they've created for a certain amount of time. And in that process, it did not, the material that we provided them did not catch fire. It didn't explode. It didn't, you know, have any warning signs that would show that it should be under this designation. I think at the worst, it smoldered for probably 30 seconds after the butane torch was removed from it, but that doesn't determine combustibility. And so we're working with the researcher there at USDA in New Mexico, who's going to develop a scientific study, kind of a case study that will then be peer reviewed and submitted into a publication that's peer reviewed. And then from there, you know, if we get the designation that, you know, all scientists agree with that designation, then it's something that we may be able to take nationally and have it removed from the NFPA's designation as a combustible material. And so with that, that would take away a lot of the onerous requirements that are included with it. And so it's a path that we're familiar with on the almond side. And so we're continuing it also with the walnut side. We figure if they're applying it to the walnuts, we might as well take up the fight there too.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Although the Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Michael Regan announced a delay in a review of the National Ambient Air Quality Standards until after the 2024 presidential election, 32 business groups, including agriculture interests, are already making their voice heard about what the standards should include. The NAAQ ground level ozone standards have been a political hot potato for years, especially for ag interests that have said EPA uses the standards to regulate farm dust. The standards have been a headache for farmers and ranchers in some regions of the country, particularly in the Southwest, as many of those producers have had to work to reduce dust pollution on their farms as part of their plans in non-attainment areas, areas that are currently not meeting standards. On August 21st, Regan announced a new review of the standards after the Clean Air Scientific Advisory Committee recommended changes. According to a timeline presented by EPA in a news release, the new review will not be completed until after the November 2024 election. In a letter to Regan on Thursday, agriculture and rural interests and other business groups asked EPA to maintain existing NAAQ standards for particulate fine matter. The letter was signed by the Agriculture Retailers Association, American Farm Bureau Federation, Corn Refiners Association, the Fertilizer Institute, and others. A front will continue over the Corn Belt here today. It brought scattered showers to many areas over the weekend and continues its pursuit to the southeast with more showers. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization's Food Price Index averaged 121.4 points in August, a 2.6 drop from July, reversed in a rebound registered that month. The August drop pushed the index 38 points lower than its peak reached in March of 2022. The overall drop was driven by declines in the index for dairy products, vegetable oils, meat, and cereals, while the sugar price index rose modestly. The dairy price index averaged 111.3 points in August and took the biggest drop, down 4.6 points from July, the eighth straight monthly decline. The vegetable oil index averaged 125.8 points, 4.6 points below July. The meat price index averaged 111.3 points in August, down 4.6 points from July, the eighth consecutive monthly drop. The sugar price index averaged 148.2 points in August, up 1.9 points from July, and as much as 37.7 points or 34% from its level in the same month last year. Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow is now touting Commodity Credit Corporation dollars as a viable cushion to help supplement scarce Farm Bill dollars. Stabenow told farm reporters outside the Senate chamber last week that she and ranking Ag Republican John Bozeman appealed to USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack for trade promotion dollars from the CCC, cushioning a farm bill whose funding the budget committees won't increase.
We're looking for every way to expand funding to get things done for our farmers. And so we'll see what they determine in terms of the amount of money from the CCC, but I expect if the Secretary able to do it, that it will be robust funding.
Stabenow says up to $30 billion in CCC funds is available for commodity efforts like the market assistance and McGovern-Dole humanitarian programs.
A large part of that is already the way we fund the Farm Bill. So it's not that there's $30 billion additional.
Not brand new money, but funds USDA has on hand each fiscal year. Marketing, research, and education are some of the ways recipients of the USDA Specialty Crop Block Grants use their awards to advance their industry. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
The breakdown of recently announced USDA Specialty Crop Block Grant awards provided by Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, Jenny Moffitt.
We just announced $72.9 million.
Divided among 55 states and territories. With funding going to
specialty crop producers, organizations that support specialty crop producers, as well as other marketing organizations across their state. Projects can include things like investing in food safety, specialty crop research, developing new and improved seed variety, increasing child and adult nutrition, knowledge, consumption, and education of specialty crops.
The 2023 edition of the awards are unique in that
this year marks an investment of $1 billion combined total since 2006. Of these projects. So there are now 12,000 projects with $1 billion in investment for specialty crop block grants across the country.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Good Life Organic, a subsidiary of Veg Fresh Farms, announced the launch of its compostable biodegradable packing for organic potatoes. This sustainable packaging is certified biologically degradable by the RISE Research Institutes of Sweden. The packaging, crafted from eco-friendly papers designed to fully decompose when properly discarded, Good Life Organic is proud to offer this solution to conscious consumers and retailers, according to the company.
we're waking up to a new dawn in agriculture, a better way, where farmers stop working the soil and start working with it. At Huma, our carbon-rich, humate-based products improve soil health and fertility, deliver nutrients more efficiently, and reduce crop input costs. Welcome to Humix Solutions with a human touch. Visit huma.us to learn more.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.